You just lost your loved one. Now what? Welcome to the Grief and Life podcast, where we explore this new reality through grief-colored lenses. Openly, authentically, I'm your host, Nina Rodriguez. Let's get started.
Hello, 2024. We made it. We made it, guys. If you are newly bereaved, or if this year was a particularly heavy year grief-wise, the holidays can feel so burdensome and could leave us with a grief hangover at the start of the year. So how's your grief hangover? If that's the first time that you've heard this term, it's sort of like an emotional fallout. You just feel scrambled, low energy, stressed even. For those of us that have suffered a traumatic loss, you could also feel that dread come January 1st. That dread of, gosh, what am I going to lose this year? And it's not even to be negative. It's just that protective side of us that's trying to keep us safe. That part of our brain that's like, all right, let's get ready for whatever's next. There's this lull of energy when the year starts, at least for some of us, right? I'll tell you, this year was the fifth Christmas and New Year after my brother passed. Sometimes I still get screwed up with the times, but he passed in September 2019, so we immediately hit the holidays right after. And although it has not been 5 years, this is still the fifth holiday. And so we've had a few holidays under our belt, and it was the first one that I decided to be a little bit more social, just because it's fair to my husband, who has been with me and my family through the holidays over the past few years. And I wanted to reciprocate some of that energy that he's invested in our relationship because of my grief. So he has a much bigger family than I do, with very different dynamics. And that could take a toll on me, especially. He has so many siblings on his mother and father's side. And I love every single one of them, and I enjoy spending time with them and their company. But I can't help it. It reminds me of how much I miss my brother. So whenever I'm with them, and they're having a great time, and they're remembering childhood memories, and they're high-fiving and dancing with each other and celebrating and having a good time and cheering through the new year, it just makes the void for me that much louder. And does that mean I resent them or anything? Absolutely not. But it is a reality. This is part of that duality of grief. That grief, as I always say, is not this or that. It's this and that. So in that this and that scenario, it feels a little bit bittersweet to witness so much love, knowing that you'll never have that. And knowing, for example, in my case, that a lot of his siblings have children, and playing auntie with his family side is beautiful, and also a reminder that I'll never have that with any of my own. My brother didn't have children. So, gosh, the spectrum of emotions at any given time, as much as we talk about grief, and as open as I like to be about it, I also respect that there is beauty in partaking in the joy. And that's one of the things I would like to address now in season two. So we're officially starting season two, and I'll get to what to expect in season two. I'm very excited. Being able to hold space for joy is equally as important in grief, especially if you've been past the initial stage of grief, or the initial few years that are just pure survival mode for so many of us. So I feel that I've reached a point past the survival mode, and now we're getting into the, okay, where was I? How do I rebuild from here phase, right? I had a beautiful time with my husband's family, and they love to dance. They make amazing food, and they love to laugh, and they're very, very joyous people culturally and just as a family. And so I was able to partake in that. But there was a point when you had the countdown. So it's like 3, 2, 1, and Happy New Year, and everybody's hugging. And that, I don't know if you've ever seen in the movies when the loud room goes really quiet and everything kind of goes into slow motion. So that's a little bit of what it feels like. It just feels like being very alone in a very crowded space. And something interesting happened this year. We were at my husband's father's bar and lounge. They own a restaurant with a bar and lounge space that they hosted his family for the holidays. And when it came time to ring in the new year, and after all the hugs, probably around like 5 minutes past midnight, I was sitting in one of the chairs staring at the TV, looking at the fireworks and the New Year's display for New York City, which is what was on the television. And I was kind of zoned out. I didn't even realize I was zoned out. But one of my sister-in-laws, she comes up to me and she says, "Thank you for being here. I know this is not easy for you." And I really felt like she was the only person that saw me in that moment. It was very special. It meant the world. I don't think I thanked her for it. I was caught a little bit off guard by it, but it was loud and everybody's cheering. And I just said, "Thank you so much." And I didn't explain how important her acknowledgement was to me. And in that moment, I start reflecting on the fact that my parents aren't there. My brother's not there. My parents are spending the holidays by themselves just because we were in a different city. And it dawned on me that this is just the new reality. And it's still so painful no matter how many years go by. So in that moment, I get a little sad and I'm sitting there staring at the television, just kind of zoning out again and thinking of my brother. And the camera suddenly pans out to this woman who is making a hand gesture, like a happy celebratory hand gesture that my brother used to make. And it was just in that moment. And I love those synchronicities because it just felt like him saying, "I see you and I'm right here." And those moments are so incredibly powerful. So that's just what life looks like now. This is life in the aft part of grief, in that after there's like a solid line, a solid break in continuity from what your life was to what it is now. And this is the after in all its glory. So with season one being, if you heard my last episode, it was an exploration. I explained how it started as an exploration and it evolved into this platform and a resource for others. So I was reflecting on where do I want to take season two? And season two feels very important because it feels more deliberate. And I'm going to have special guests who share their stories uniquely. I'm going to be doing more solo episodes and I want to focus on what I want to call the anatomy of grief. Because at the end of the day, grief is so misunderstood. It's such a common experience, but because it's so avoided, it's so misunderstood. And that avoidance yields space for a lot of people to interpret it so differently and misinterpret it more often than not. And then you add the element of the medical field making it a pathology so they can prescribe medication or treat it a certain way according to their guidelines. Unfortunately, grief doesn't fit into guidelines. It doesn't have boundaries. We can set arbitrary boundaries that for ourselves, but grief spills over onto everything and everyone around us in one way or another. And this is the part that I want to explore. I want to give it a voice. And in my own exploration, I realized that I thought my grief experience was universal. I thought what I was experiencing, everybody experienced, until I started attending grief groups and having one-on-one conversations and reading books and really seeing that the experience is so different. It's so nuanced. And even though much of the experience can be very similar, it's processed differently depending on what your background is. So for example, if your family is a family that thinks emotions are a sign of weakness, you're going to process grief differently than a family that embraces emotions for what it is, where vulnerability could actually be a strength, as Brené Brown says. We're going to explore all of this, but before we go deep, I realize there's a significant need for a lot of people to understand what exactly is grief. If you ask 10 people, what is grief? They will likely give you 10 different answers. Each person will give you their own different answer. So how can we define grief when nobody can really agree on what it is? The closest thing to an agreement is that grief is a natural and normal response to loss. And I agree with this definition because at the end of the day, that's exactly what it is. Some people want to categorize it into disorder or a reaction or something to be bypassed. But quite frankly, it's a very normal response to loss. And this is why there's such a dissonance when we try to fix it. There is nothing to fix. This is normal. So how do we move forward? How do we understand what's happening? How do we process the emotions? How do we separate grief from, let's say, bereavement and mourning and early grief versus later grief? And how do we fit all of this within the context of our religious teachings or our cultural understandings or family dynamics, work dynamics? How do we fit all of these different pieces? I was having this conversation with an amazing psychologist today who is going to be a guest on my podcast. And we were talking about how so much of the suffering and grief is how other people treat us because they don't understand what grief is. That's what I tried to communicate in that, I believe it was episode 2 of the first season, where it's the pain is going to be there, but the suffering is optional. And a lot of the things that were painful, besides the fact that my brother died, for example, was the things people said to you just out of, not sure, it's the discomfort with their own feelings, their attempt to help, but not knowing what to say or how to say it. So for example, day 3 after my brother died, I remember somebody said to me, well, you know, he wants you to be happy, so you really have to get over it. And it would be a good idea if you and your husband have a child, because that's the only thing that's going to make your parents happy. This is day 3. And even if it was day 300, that's still not appropriate, right? So it's like, how do we get this so wrong as a society? And how is it that the person who has suffered this incredible loss and is going to have to relearn how to live in the after, on top of all that, has to deal with the comments, often well-meaning, from different people, and the lack of support from, let's say, workplaces or society or even our own family? So breaking these down into different areas, and what do I mean by that? The anatomy of grief, what is it? First, defining it, addressing our own biases, like really taking a mirror to ourselves and understanding that how we deal with grief and how we define grief has everything to do with how we were brought up and where we live and what our belief system is. So if I believe, for example, that grief is something that takes a really long time to get over, then that's the filter with which I will view grief in other people. Now, if you have somebody that says grief is something I need to muscle through within a month, then that's the lens with which they will view the world and other grievers. And we're judging people's grief all the time, even though we say that it's okay to grieve however you want. Subconsciously, we impose our beliefs on other people, and this can be very difficult for many people. So we're going to explore that. We're going to explore the difference between early grief, long-term grief, what is helpful versus unhelpful, how it's useful to say no often in your grief, how to give ourselves permission to grieve, what rituals we can employ, how do we build support circles. Who is this new person? Who is this new you? How to get to know ourselves within the context of grief, and what to do when our own family hurts us. And one thing that happens often is realizing the fragility of life, like really, really understanding in depth how fragile life is and how suddenly we fear losing more people in the context of grief. So there's all these elements to it, that it's not just the loss, it's everything that happens thereafter. And how do we deal with this? What's normal? What's not normal? What does that even mean in the context of grief? We're going to explore all of this along with sharing beautiful stories from people of all walks of life. And this is something that I do want to highlight, because the way that I approach my interviews is I'm providing a space for my guests to share their truth as they understand it. And because I honor that there is no one way to grieve, that also means that people have very different belief systems. For example, you're going to hear from some of my guests how some of them use plant-based medicine to walk the path forward in their healing process. You'll hear how other people use religious beliefs like Christianity or Judaism or any other belief system that serves them in their grief, or how other people hang on to astrology and how astrology can help somebody with grief. And my job is not to tell them what's right or wrong. My job is to honor their truth, lead from a place of curiosity, and lead from a place of like, what do you mean by that? And how did that help you? And if it helped you, I'm sure it's going to help somebody else. This season, we're leading with even more curiosity. I'm going to be sharing a lot of stories and a lot of people who have different perspectives on how they've walked their grief path forward and what worked for them and what didn't. And I hope that even if you have your own belief systems, they'll invite you to be open to these stories. And even if they're very different from what you've known, try to get something out of it, or at least try to see what they have in common. I think it's fascinating. I think at the end of the day, we're all doing our best to figure this out. We're all doing our best to figure this out. And the more we support each other, the more open we are, the more we can get takeaways and help each other figure this out and even gain something for ourselves. Another goal that I have is to create a grief-informed society world, really, is my ultimate goal, is to create a grief-informed world. Grief is such an integral part of our human experience, and it's so misunderstood. So I want to bring words to your awareness, share some of the studies, share some of the data, and share one-on-one personal experiences from different people of all walks of life. I also want to share some frameworks that centers and organizations and people have defined that are very useful. These can be very useful tools. For example, the Dougie Center in Portland, Oregon, where I used to live many years ago. The Dougie Center has the 10 core principles of being grief-informed. They have defined 10 core principles that I'll share with you here. And it says, to become grief-informed begins with the initial step of identifying and embracing 10 core principles about grief. These core principles involve recognizing what grief is and best practices for supporting people who are grieving. So the 10 core principles are, 1, grief is natural. Loss is a normal, inevitable, and universal human experience. People have an innate capacity to adapt to loss and function healthily. 2 is complex and non-pathological. Grief is an adaptive, non-pathological response to loss. So it's an adaptive, normal response to loss. Grief is complex and complicated because people and relationships are complex and complicated. So I always say there's the pain of the reality of the loss, and then there's the suffering. Suffering is like the icing on the crappy cake we were dealt, right? It's like the extra stuff. And the extra stuff is the complexities that are added to our grief because of where we come from, our relationships, our belief system, our culture, religion, and how that evolves with our human experience. 3 is contextual. Grief is not solely an individual experience. Grief is interwoven in a socio-cultural context influenced by family, community, and other social systems. Acknowledging and addressing the socio-cultural and historical factors that impact grief can reduce disparities and promote equity and inclusion. 4 is disruptive. Grief challenges our identity, relationships, beliefs, and assumptions about the world and our role in it. 5, relational connection and perceived support. So having people who care and support us after a loss helps us navigate the changes in our lives. Feeling heard and having people to share with us know we're not alone in our grief. So having that support system is key. 6, personal empowerment and agency. This is a huge one. Experiencing loss and grief can make us feel helpless or out of control. Choosing our own healthy responses rather than what others tell us to do or not to do can help us regain a sense of balance and a personal agency. So regaining agency, regaining what little bit of control you have after a major devastating loss is hugely important. And defining our boundaries, defining our own grief truth is extremely important as well. Imagine if I listened to every single person's advice after my brother died. Get over it. Have a baby. Move on. It's just, my life would look very different and would be very reactive. So regaining that sense of agency is very important. Safety is 7. Experiencing loss challenges our sense of safety in the world. Paying attention to our physical, emotional, and spiritual needs will help us cope with all of the changes that happen after loss. 8 is person-centered. The intensity and experience of grief are unique for every individual. I learned this the hard way because, for example, in the grief groups, the sibling grief groups that I attended, my brother and I were very close. I loved my brother. I was never angry at him following his passing. I was not resentful. And yet, I was shocked when other siblings expressed their anger, frustration, resentment, and sometimes addressed their sibling who passed in a very harsh way, in my opinion. And that was very jarring because I was like, how can you be sad if you're that angry? And then it dawned on me that it's all a part of it. I believe sadness is the underlying core emotion beneath anger. If you dig deep enough, that pain, that sadness is manifested in different ways. And not every sibling has a loving relationship. So many relationships are complicated. They're layered. You're grieving that. Some siblings are grieving the fact that they never got to resolve their issues before their person passed. grief is person-centered. It varies by person, and this is extremely important to honor and acknowledge. Number 9 is dynamic. The dynamic nature of grief cannot be fully captured by stage, phase, or other prescriptive models. There are no universally acceptable or quote-unquote correct ways to grieve. Humans like processes. So steps 1, 2, 3 on how to get rid of grief. You know, unfortunately, life doesn't work that way. Grief certainly doesn't work that way. This particular information provided by the Dougie Center does not state this. This is what I'm about to say is my own opinion. But for example, the Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's stages of grief were never meant to be prescriptive for following the death of a loved one or of a person. And I'm not going to go into this. I actually made an episode on season 1 about this, but she even said that her research was not based for this use. It has been misused in the context of grief and loss following the death of a person. And this has done more of a disservice than it has done a service. A lot of people go through the stages in one day and then they feel like something's wrong with them. It's just that this was never meant to be used this way. So it's a tool being misused in the context of grief. There is no one size fits all. There's no model. There's no, hey, you got to stage 5 and you're done. It doesn't work that way. So what does work then? How do we tailor help for individuals? We're going to go into all of that. And then lastly, grief is non-finite. So loss is interwoven into our identity. Therefore, grieving is not a finite experience. Grief doesn't have some magical endpoint. We can grieve someone throughout our entire lives. One of the scariest things in my experience was that I hit week 6 after my brother died, and I was like, why am I not feeling better? And then it dawned on me, this is a lifelong thing, and it's not going to feel this intense and jagged and painful and sharp, but it's something that you remember for the rest of your life. As a griever, it is something that I wish other people understood. So for example, I had a colleague who said, oh, I can't believe my grandma still talks about my grandpa. He died 20 years ago. I can't believe she's still sad. And that, to somebody who hasn't lost a person, maybe sounds like a logical argument, maybe. But when you've lost someone 20 years, 100 years, 2 years, 2 days, it's all the same. Grief time, which is something I will talk about in a later episode, grief time is nonlinear. Grief time does not follow a linear timeline. There's no clock, there's no calendar. Grief time is separate from linear time. And that's extremely important for us to understand, especially if we are looking to support one another. So we're going to go into all of these facts and the list that I just read about the 10 core principles of being grief-informed by the Dougie Center. I'll link it in the show notes. It's very useful information and it's provided by the Dougie Centers. With all that being said, I welcome you to season 2. Thank you for being here. This will be much more focused on tangible information that you could use to understand grief, that you could use to support others, support yourself, to show yourself grace, to make sense of so much of this that doesn't make sense, to see how it evolves as you evolve. Grief evolves with us. My grief year 1 is not the grief that I'm feeling now. It's completely different. But it's grief nonetheless. And so grief to me is this umbrella term, and it's not just all sad. I think it's the greatest teacher I've ever had. It's been an alchemical process, a process of transmuting so many parts of me. And I don't believe my brother had to die for me to understand this. And I also don't believe that you have to find the silver lining in grief. I really don't. I'm just sharing how my grief has evolved and how I have chosen to make meaning out of this craziness. So I'm excited for the guests who are going to be in the podcast. Season 2, again, will be understanding the anatomy of grief, and interspersed will be incredible guests who have very different viewpoints about what grief is and how it has evolved for them. Thank you for being here. Welcome to season 2 of the Grief and Light podcast. That's it for today's episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Grief and Light podcast. I'd also love to connect with you and hear your thoughts and your stories. Feel free to share them with me via my Instagram page at Grief and Light, or you can also visit griefandlight.com for more information and updates. Thank you so much for being here, for being you, and always remember, you are not alone.